Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Beiser, the owner and lead writer. Joining me this week, artist for Smugby Games and Game Wisdom site designer, Kenneth Olm.
Hey there.
And returning guest, fan of the site, Lorson Poirier.
Hey.
Hey, Lorson, it's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you, too.
All right, so this week I am on yet another new headset in my continuing search to find a headset to call my own. Hopefully this one will do the trick. If not, I may just go back to the Logitech one that Ken recommended for me.
You should have went all the way for G930. It's the best one. The one I use. That's the wireless one.
Yeah, that may be the next one after this one.
Alright.
Alright, so the news this week, which we'll be talking about later on, but in case you haven't heard, the Oculus Rift is now owned by Facebook. And this is going to kind of be our cast to sort of consult Ken, because he's kind of heartbroken when I told him the news a few days ago.
This is something I didn't expect in my life. Mm. It's one of those moments.
Yeah. So I'll have to use my big, I think, 3 courses of psychology to help ease Ken through the pain.
Well, I went through all the stages of grief already. I think I'm over it now.
All right.
But I'll discuss with you everything that's happened in the last 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, while we'll be talking about the Oculus Rift later on, is there any other interesting news that either you or Larson would like to talk about?
That's pretty much the biggest news there is.
Yeah, nothing can really top that.
Yeah. In that case, we'll move on then and we'll talk about games we've played, and then we'll spend the rest of the cast basically focusing on the Oculus Rift and its impact of what's happened. So, for me, as we all know, this week was the release of Diablo III Reaper of Souls, which my friends have all been playing and loving. Unfortunately, I ordered it the physical fancy schmancy collector's edition, and as of this time of the cast, it is somewhere between California and New Jersey right now. I don't know where it is at the moment, but it means that I'm not going to be playing it for at least a few more days. So, the game that I have been playing, though, is Counter-Strike, and it's pretty interesting, I would say. Basically, one of my friends sent me a message the other day saying, hey, you have it? I go, yeah, would you like to play? Yeah, sure. And he basically put me right into the competitive rank matches, which is like basically throwing someone brand new from League of Legends into, you know, rank competitive play, which they did to me as well. So I probably should have learned my lesson there.
Trial by fire, man. If you survive, you'll become stronger.
Yeah, and it was definitely a trial by fire. In 3 matches of playing, I think I actually hit someone twice.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I don't mean like kill them. I mean my gun actually matches score a hit on their body.
360 no-scope. All skill, Josh.
Mm-hmm. And it is weird playing Counter-Strike. As someone who never got into it before, Ken, Larson, have either of you played like any of like the previous iterations of Counter-Strike?
I haven't, unfortunately. I was too young.
I played the original Counter-Strike a lot. We played a lot of LAN parties, too. And I had a friend of mine, and all she did was play at mod server, so I would join her. So I played a lot of Counter-Strike. But it's just not really my flavor of a shooter.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's an interesting point, King, because I know you love Team Fortress, which is another abstracted shooter. What drew you into Team Fortress that sort of pushed you away from Counter-Strike?
I just like the concept of not only is it, you know, the teamwork is a big aspect of it, but the concept of adaptation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just change your classes based on the situation. If you need one of this, you go for this direction. If you need that, you go that direction. And also, you can take a couple hits before you explode, so you won't get, like, you know, one-shotted running around the corner. You actually have a chance to react.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing about Counter-Strike. For those of you who haven't played, the competitive match, each round basically lasts, or each, like, I'm not sure if it's round or match, but each time you play a map, it can pretty much be over in 30 seconds. Everyone has one life. You take quick damage in this game. Someone gets a bead on you, gets like 4 or 5 shots in on you, you're pretty much dead, or, you know, down to 5 or 6 health. And this is my first time playing competitive. I did play Counter-Strike before, like, wow, maybe like 6, 7 months ago. I was just doing the unranked, you know, free-for-all crazy time like that. And competitive is, well, of course it's a lot different, but as I was talking about, the whole mechanics of the game just feel very weird to me, and this is coming from someone who's played Team Fortress, Left 4 Dead, Call of Duty, you know, insert crazy arcade first-person shooter type deal. And the game tries to have, like, that model of realism. You're basically, you know, counter-terrorist versus terrorist, but everything is definitely arcade, very abstracted play. And they're, like, telling me that you're not really supposed to aim down the sights in this game. It's more about to do quick stops to basically center the reticle and then fire. If you try doing, you know, quake-style run and jump, you're never going to hit someone. They're just going to kill you in one or two shots.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's just like a step above, like, the Rainbow Six games in terms of, like, the lethality of it. And again, and it's people that have played the game so long that they know everything, you know? Everything can calculate into numbers pretty much at that point.
Oh, yeah. And a few of my friends have, like, the little medal that says they've been playing for, like, 4 or 5 years. And I know Team Fortress, we got one of those as well. I think I got, like, the 1 or 2 year medal when they first introduced it.
Oh, yeah. I have one of all those medals, too.
I have one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Steam account's 9 years. 9 years old now.
And didn't we do our Steam game count last time?
Yeah, you're still beating me. But let's see. I think I'm probably in the 300s or something like that. Let's see. Oh, there we go. 346.
And my problem that I'm having with Counter-Strike is that it is its own, I guess, unique beast when it comes to these mechanics. When I'm trying to shoot someone, like I said earlier, I'm trying to shoot these guys, and even if I'm staying perfectly still, tapping my gun, I'm not hitting them. I see them just, like, run around, and the guy just literally shot me twice in the head and killed me while I'm just, like, shooting 20 rounds of bullets at him, and none of them were hitting, or I hit one for, like, 10 points of health.
Right, and, again, they're also fiddly, and they know exactly how to jump and move.
Yeah.
So no matter, even if they get a glimpse of you around the corner, they know exactly the trajectory and speed they need to kill you in the next, like, couple seconds. So, like, you're like, oh, it's like one of those kind of games.
It's that same feeling I got when I was trying to play competitive League of Legends. When you're losing in that game, it's just soul-crushing to have to sit through an entire match knowing that you're basically screwed.
Well, the thing is that with League of Legends is that the reason the games last so long is because you always can come back from a bad early game or a bad mid game, because one team fight could win the game for you.
Yeah.
Just one. You know, you knock 5 of them out and that's it. Even if they're dominating you a whole round.
Yep. I think I actually did win a league match one time because of that. We got the whole group wiped and we managed to take out I forget the actual name. What's the name of, like, the home base or the hub?
The Nexus.
Okay. Oh, great. Now my League of Legends friends are going to yell at me for that.
Well, it's actually a pretty common term. I think they use it in Dota too, don't they?
Possibly. And I guess going back to Counter-Strike, one thing that I found interesting, this wasn't there when I played it last time, was they've introduced, like, the Team Fortress, like, item concept to the game. When you win a match, there's a chance you may find an item or a weapon skin or something like that. So they've added, like, that little bit of collectability, like something out of Call of Duty. And they've also have, like, the chests. I know you two are probably well familiar with the TF2 crates that you have to buy the keys for.
Wait, I think they have the same system in Dota also, because there's keys in there too.
So it's interesting how Valve is sort of standardizing their monetization across their games like that.
Well, it is their games, and they know how to make the mad cash. I mean, TF2 already showed how it's done.
And as we talked about in previous casts, we all thought they were crazy, you know, adding monetization to Team Fortress 2 at the time.
I think it was crazy. I thought it was a joke, really, because they're talking about crafting, like MMO concepts. I'm like, this is really silly. But I like the concept of being able to having loadouts, like, so I can quickly switch and stuff.
Yeah, and it definitely took off. And, of course, you can brag about all the money you've made selling TF2 items.
Yeah, I've made probably $100 in total selling stuff.
Yep.
Oh, not with me. I've never sold anything for money, but I have spent, I think, over $100 on keys and other things in game.
What?
Yeah. No.
No, it's mean.
No, they're all gone. I used them all.
Oh, okay.
Those Christmas crates, they get me every year.
Yeah, I try to limit myself. I give myself, like, no more than this amount, and then that's it.
That's what I should do. It wouldn't leave me broke then.
Well, I'm the opposite, where I'm really impulsive with League of Legends skins, because I'm so addicted to sending friends skins. I don't actually buy skins for myself, I buy it for friends. We trade each other's for, like, different skins, and hopefully we'll get, like, this legendary skin or something that's worth, like, a really high value. but because we're after that pipe dream, we're always wasting our money, $4 at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I haven't delved too deep into Counter-Strike's monetization. I know they have some kind of event going on or something where they have like specific crates or specific trunks or whatever that you can buy keys for. And I don't know, honestly, if like the high-level meta game of that game involves finding these better guns or if everything is just purely aesthetic. Because I saw a few people have, you know, custom-painted guns, they have stickers on their guns, stuff like that. But it seems like, I don't know, maybe I really am just horrible at the game, but it seems like they're doing a lot better job of shooting me, even if I'm in the same position as them. Their shots seem to generally hit me more.
Right, that's the way I always felt about that game now.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, was always very boring, mm-hmm. eventually. A lot of standstills. I mean, it was tense
mm-hmm.
when it came down to two people. But overall, it didn't find nearly enjoyable as games like TF2, which is why I went to more, to me, a versatile game than mm-hmm. that.
Have either of you tried the game Loadout that's now available on Steam?
No, I haven't.
Nope. And I think I've seen it, though. And a bunch of my friends play it, or played it.
Yeah, they just released an update the other day. It's pretty much like a sort of like Team Fortress 2, except all the weapons, you basically modify them yourself. You basically buy these different parts, and you essentially create your own customized loadout out of these parts. So one person could have a rifle that shoots basically bullets in a shotgun spread. Someone else could have a laser that is essentially a sniper rifle. It's an interesting idea, but we talked about this, or I did, with, I think, Jamie a few weeks ago, and the problem with it is that it was very limited in its scope. Like, it's not like you can create these insanely varied weapons, and a lot of the time having just like a basic weapon seemed better than, you know, trying to create this crazy triple shot rocket launcher that also does flame damage or something like that.
Right.
Yep. Alright, so I think that's my game. Oh, and I guess I should mention, at this time I am the proud rank of having 2 competitive wins after playing like 5 rounds.
It's well, better than nothing.
And supposedly, once I get 8 more wins, I'll have my official ranking, so I'll be ranked with the other guys. So I guess that means I'll be able to fight against people who can kill me quicker.
I don't know. I don't think I could ever get back into that game. The only time I would play that game is for like gun mods. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's move on. Ken, what game have you been playing this week?
I've been playing Shadowfall's expansion mm-hmm. called Returns. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Shadowrun Returns expansion called Dragonfall. So far it's pretty good. I think they're really expanding upon what was already done, and again, I really loved the original game, but mm-hmm. again, it was just a bit too short. But I'm still kind of slogging through. I think I talked about it last week a little bit,
mm-hmm.
didn't I? Yeah. I've just gotten farther into the campaign, and they now have like a hub system where you can actually have like companions that you can bring in, and it's kind of hubbish, and the world's a bit more expansive too. It's neat.
Is the expansion sort of like, does it integrate into the main game, or is it just like
mm-hmm.
its own? Oh, so it's not like its own separate slice type deal.
It is its own separate story, but it correlates with the events of the main game.
Okay. Is there anything new gameplay wise to it, or is it strictly story?
I actually don't know what's new to it. I know that you can save anytime you want now, which
mm-hmm.
is cool. Before, the biggest problem with the game was you had to wait for save points, and you know those save points could be somewhere really far away,
mm-hmm.
and you had to load and just try it all over again like multiple times. And I'm a perfectionist. I want every scenario to be like the best
mm-hmm.
possible that I could do. So it was that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point. I feel the same way when I play a lot of action games. It always sucks to finish an encounter with, you know, only a quarter of your health left, and then you have to go to the next level, and you're basically, you know, having to fight with your arms tied behind your back because you're starting it weaker.
Yeah, I think even if that's the case, I always feel, even if it's like a small smidge of damage, I still want to redo it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I play Max Payne, for example, even if I take use one, you know, pill thing or whatever, I restart the whole thing, do it all over again. Even
wow.
though, and I, by the way, I never use any of the, like, better guns. I just, like, use the pistols, saving it for just, like, the moment where I can, like, use it in the future, which I never do.
Same thing we hear in RPGs as well, when you save, like, the best healing items for that inevitable boss that never comes.
Exactly. And you just end up with all the most, like, mighty items at the end, and it's never used.
Mm-hmm. I remember doing that for the game Shadow Hearts for, I think, PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2. I just like hoarded all like the best items, and then when I got to the final boss, I just, you know, blew them all in like three rounds of combat on the guy.
Well, yeah, you want to be as powerful as you can be, and you only want to use it for like dire situations, which is never dire when you get so powerful.
Now with Shadowruns, the game is considered officially out. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. It's when it came out, it was already done, and you know, it was still, there's still a lot of details in it, and it still looked really great. It was just kind of short, and I think that was a problem with a lot of people, because those kind of games you expect to be 40-hour epics, right? And when the game ended, you expected there to be like the first chapter. But yeah, something different. So we'll see how this game actually pans out and see if it's better or worse than the original campaign.
Have they announced any more expansions, or is that still sort of up in the air at the moment?
I'm not sure. I didn't hear any news about that, but they're already working on other games, so I'm sure that they're putting this game behind them. So.
And I forgot to ask you this, Ken. Did you kickstart Shadowrun, or did you just buy it when it came out?
I bought it when it came out. I pre-ordered it on the site because I heard about it after the fact. And when you pre-ordered, you still got the same Kickstarter amount.
Okay, cool. All right, so with that, Orson, what game have you been playing this week?
I've been playing a game called Osu. It is a rhythm-based game, and it's based off of a Japanese Nintendo DS game that I guess never came to America. And it's just, the original game was initially crazy. Like, you're supposed to just, like, cheer people up, and, like, you're, like, a male cheerleader, and you had to either hit circles, roll a ball on a slider, or spin a spinner as fast as you could. And instead they changed it to a music rhythm game, kind of like DDR, except with hand input, or, like, mouse input, tablet input, and it's just oddly addicting. You just want to be able to finish this one level. You'll get so close and you'll fail, and then you want to sit there and scream, and then you're like, okay, well, I'm ready to play again, and then just go on. I caught myself being like, oh, I'll play for 5 minutes, and then playing for an hour and a half.
I love those rhythm games, actually, because I remember I played Elite Beat Agents, which is similar to it, and I think, too bad there's never any sequels to that game, because I thought it had a pretty inventive game type.
Now, this wasn't made by the same guys who did Elite Beat Agents, right?
This is actually, I think it was a group effort by just some diehard fans, and it's greatly influenced by Elite Beat Agent.
Okay. And I forgot to ask you this, is this for the PC, or is this on a handheld?
Yes, they have, actually, they came out for PC, they do have an iPhone version, and there's an Android version in development,
cool.
Last I heard.
Do they use licensed music for this, or custom music?
Yes, they use licensed music, use custom music, pretty much anything in between. Like, if someone likes it, it's like you can make your own beat maps, which is what like playing a song is called. And like currently I'm making a beat map for an English song, and it's, well, that's awful, and it's just kind of on the shelf. But I know all, like, actually there was a problem, I think, like they did have a bunch of Skrillex ones on there. They've been all taken down, and you can't download them anymore. And I think that was because of like a cease and desist,
That's correct.
Now, when you say that you can create beat maps, is it as simple as just importing your song, or do you actually like tweak and alter the level based on what the music is?
Well, how it works is you take an MP3 file and you put it into the correct OSU folder, and then from there you can go, once you start up OSU, you have like three options. You have play, edit, or options, and then you go into edit and you just pick a song and you literally make it yourself. Like, it's very like easy. Like, you have your options of making a slider, of making just a circle to hit, or a spinner, and then you can tweak how fast the slider goes, how fast the spinner goes, how fast the music is, how, like, if you miss a note, is that going to be just a small penalty, or is that going to drain half your life bar, kind of thing. Like, everything's really set up to be pretty straightforward, so like it's easy to do, but extremely hard to master.
Okay. Does it have, like, the same, like, crazy, like, theme or story that runs behind the music, like EBA?
You can make it. Not everyone does.
Okay.
So there is one map that is extremely well done, and it is based off of a Phoenix Wright game. It's based off Phoenix Wright, and you're in a court, and you're actually defending an Elite Beat agent from, like, committing murder because he didn't do it. And if you do so well, then the story had, like if you do so well in a certain section, if you do above a certain percentage, which is pretty high, you will successfully defend your client. If you don't do so well, then you'll just kind of mutter and be like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting, right? And then, like, you see him get, like, the abuse typically from from Edgeworth or whoever. And then, so the story, so that one's actually a real story, but apparently that took a couple of months and about 7 or 8 people to make. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember with Elite Beat Agents, they had, like, the similar thing that if you do high enough on each part of the story, you get, like, the happy version, or if you just barely make it through, you get the poor version. Mm-hmm. And with Elite Beat Agents, I think that was, like, the game actually I almost broke my DS screen trying to finish that one.
Yeah, so
I think their music selection was a little odd, though, if you remember playing the game.
Yeah, they had, like, everything from, like, classic music. I think there was, like, Madonna in there. Then they had Avril Lavigne. And I think, wasn't the final song from the Rolling Stones?
I think it was The End of the World. Was that it? Something like that.
It was Jumping Jack Flash.
I think my favorite was, Earth, Wind, Fire, September.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That one, and obviously Skater Boy was an excellent one also.
Also actually has 2 Madonna songs you can download. And then, yeah, and you can make your own if you're not happy with your selection.
Cool. So how much does it cost to buy the game?
It's free.
Okay. Do you know if it's available on Steam or any of the digital clients, or is it just available from their website?
Yeah, it's just available from their website. Like I said, it's just like kind of like a small team worked together to pretty much recreate the DS game on the computer because they loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a free to download. I don't know about the iPhone version, but I do know on the PC it is free.
Cool.
And there's a Mac version as well.
I don't know what they would get. Probably get in a lot of trouble iPhone-wise for all these copyrighted songs. Because online you can probably get away with some of it, but on an iPhone version, they're pretty strict about that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah, like I said, like, any song can go, so as long as, if, like, a DJ, like, put stuff up on SoundCloud and had it download for free, like how some Glitch Mob, like, they'll occasionally release the new mix once in a while, and that'll be a free download, I'm pretty sure those get along just fine, but, yeah, like, there's stuff from, like, anime on there, like, the new opening for Kill la Kill and Attack on Titan, like, those are both up there, and those probably would not fly very well.
Yeah. Cool. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I guess one thing I just want to ask, has there been any announcements of any new Elite Beat Agent games from Nintendo? Because the series basically stopped after that first one.
I think it's dead.
I'm pretty sure it's dead. There was they had a lot of faith in it, but when it didn't sell up the numbers they expected, they kind of just wrote it off. And, you know, they made a public announcement saying that they were disappointed in sales, and maybe there's something in the future, but no official announcement.
Yeah, I know there were 2 games from Japan. I think I actually imported one of them, and that was sort of like the basis to bring EBA over. It's kind of weird with Nintendo how some of the Japanese series they bring over, and a lot of them they don't. I still remember all the outcry over not getting Xeno Chronicles over here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, again, they're looking at, like, focus groups and marketing and their audience, and obviously the audience they're shooting for doesn't want RPGs or doesn't want these weird Japanese games or experimental games. They want, you know, simulation games and anything that's super casual, like party games or the first party titles. That's it. Don't bring anything else over.
You know, don't want to be too risky. People might have fun.
Yeah. And yet the strange thing is that Nintendo was all excited about bringing Bayonetta 2 to the Wii U, I think that's coming out this year.
Strange. If it wasn't for them, the game would have never came out.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really feel like the right fit, the company, for, like, what their image is.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo's definitely having some trouble this generation. There's still the reports that we're going to get a price cut at some point on it.
For the Wii U?
Yeah.
I still don't think I'd pick it up. Even if there was a price drop, I still wouldn't pick it up.
Yeah, there'd have to be, like, as pretty much the most popular opinion on the Wii U is, oh, let's have a Dungeons & Dragons game. Like, that's the only way I'd ever buy it.
Well, there's a Smash Brothers game, and that's pretty much it. That's the only thing that I would care
about. Once Super Smash Brothers Brawl, like, I haven't played it, and I'm not going to bother because it uses Wii Motion Control. I got SSX Blur for the Wii, and that was... that's a game beyond frustrating disappointment. You can't even do half the supers because you have to have precise movements to make it possible. And, like, you can't really advance unless you do them. And it's too disappointing. Like, I can't be tricked again.
Yeah, well, plus, I think it's a software issue. There's nothing really out for it. Nothing really uses the screen very well. Not enough third-party support, etc. So, I mean, they're completely relying on the first-party titles, and nothing that they've announced is that exciting. The only games that I think are doing pretty well for Nintendo are the games for their handheld system.
Yep, the 3DS has definitely bounced back. I remember when, you know, like, the first few months it was released, a lot of people weren't that excited about it, and then a lot more third-party games came along. Atlus has pretty much, you know, throw their weight around with all the Shin Megami Tensei games. And it's definitely gotten a lot better, although they're still somewhat lacking in terms of the downloadable content and a lot of the virtual store type deals on it.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear that this week they did announce that Game Boy Advance games were going to make it to the Wii U's virtual console, which I guess is pretty nice. It seems like Nintendo is the only company that's really actively pursuing backwards compatibility or being able to play these classic games.
Yeah, well, I think they're trying to do anything to get back into the light. I mean, the big thing that they have, and they've always relied on, is nostalgia, right? So they're going to bring back these old titles that everyone loved, and maybe they'll, instead of, you know, getting an emulator and playing it, they'll, you know, straight up buy it from the store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely nostalgia is a big deal. And we've said this before, that Nintendo seems to be coming at a very hard time really cutting loose, I think. There's only been a few cases where they've done something completely out of the box. Something like Luigi's Mansion, Pikmin. They were great examples, but then either nothing else happens, or they just start iterating on those games over and over again.
I think the worst part is the era of this new Super Mario stuff. Mm-hmm. There's like 8 of them now, and they're not new.
Thank
it's not
you.
New. It's not good. It's all the same game. It's always frustrating, and they only add like one or two components. It could have just been DLC for all of it. I mean, you don't only spend $60 or $50 on a new version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Like I got new Super Mario Bros. Wii. Mm-hmm. I think that's the right one because, you know, they all pretty much have the same title.
Yeah.
And that was okay, but I think it's all based off pretty much off of Super Mario Bros. Super Mario Bros. 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and then I had more fun playing that than the new one.
I bought Super Mario 3D Land, I think, right around Christmas this year, or last year, and it was okay, but it never really got to that point of challenging, in the same way that Super Mario Galaxy was, or at least it offered a lot more variety in terms of level design.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing goes with the Kirby games, too. It looks great, but the difficulty is just not there at all. Like, what's the point of this live system in the first place, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you ever play Kirby Canvas Curse?
No. That was one of those 3DS games, right?
That was the DS. Game. Just the DS. That one was actually really well done. It had actually a lot of challenge to it. You could just get through levels basically without too much trouble, but to get all, like, the medals, which will unlock harder levels and the boss fights, did require a little bit more thinking and more challenge to it.
Right. I think they're, again, not all the first-party titles are... I mean, I think, again, those are mainstream titles. That's why they have to be a little easier. And they're targeting a casual audience, so why crank up the difficulty?
Mm-hmm.
I think those other games are more niche, so they can experiment with the difficulty a little more. Yeah.
And I said this in a post I wrote a few weeks ago. It sort of feels like a lot of Nintendo's titles have, like, a reverse age barrier. You can only enjoy them before you reach a certain age. Because by then, your skills will be so great that the games don't really offer anything to really sink your teeth into. And that's why I really enjoyed the last Zelda game, A Link Between Worlds. Because it was, like, for the first time, a Nintendo game that had some bite to it. There was no, you know, annoying fairy saying, hey, you need to go here. Hey, you need to go here. You need to do this. They basically just, like, kicked you out of Link's house and said, okay, go. Do whatever the hell you want. As long as you go these 5 or 7 dungeons or something like that.
Right. I think it's because they know who their audience is for the Zelda franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason that it was so particularly annoying in terms of the help guide in Ocarina was because it was a new perspective, a new system, all that kind of stuff like that. It's easy to miss things.
Mm-hmm. And I will say the best thing about Between Two Worlds is that they pretty much was restrained themselves on using all the 3DS's crazy features. You needed to use the camera, you didn't have to use the microphone and all that other crap. You could just basically play the game using your regular controls with maybe like a little of the touchscreen.
Well, at least they're not. At least they're not the Vita, right? That's the point. It's still doing much better than that Vita, because it had some really great games like Tearaway for it that came out, which really used their control system well. It's just that no one has a Vita, so there's a problem.
I heard some really good things about the game Soul Survivor. A lot of my friends were talking about that, but again, I don't have a Vita either, so I can't tell you if it really is good or not.
Exactly, and I don't know where it's actually going, but I think I've heard of the game Soul Survivor also.
Mm-hmm. And as a quick aside, speaking about other series that have been having trouble making the mark over here, have you guys heard about the 999 series?
Nope.
Nine Persons, Nine Doors, Nine Lives, something like that?
It sounds familiar.
It's a visual novel slash adventure game type deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about, the first one was about nine people stuck on a, I forget, it's like a boat or a ocean liner or something. And the story is you have to, one of them is basically going to betray the group. And you sort of decide how the story plays out based on who you talk to, what choices you make. And there's like 10 different endings. Nine of them end with you getting killed. And then one being the true ending. It was a very interesting idea. The story was really great as it was more visual novel. It was, I think, done by the same guys who did the, I think it was called Hotel Dusk, something like that for the 3DS. Have either of you heard of that one?
I own that game, actually.
Oh. Yeah, I heard of it.
I hated that game. What did you think of it?
I like the art style.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So, getting back to 999, they released a second game called, I think, Virtue's Last Reward for the 3DS. And that one sort of took things further. It presented the idea of the prisoner's dilemma. It's that psychological test of, do you trust your partner, that type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happened is that the company has decided not to basically finish the trilogy. They found that people didn't sell enough. So there's been talk about ways of maybe bringing the game out anyway, either find another publisher, downscaling the graphics, or even going to Kickstarter, which I found interesting because we haven't heard of too many Japanese developers try crowdfunding. I think the only one that comes to my mind would be Kenshi Inafune with Mighty No. 9.
I'm so excited for that.
Well, yeah, it's looking better and better as it goes on.
Because
they don't have all that restriction from Capcom to do, you know, all the stuff they wanted to do.
Or, you know, to ruin the game.
So I take it you're a Mega Man fan, Larson?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely love Mega Man. Like, Mega Man Battle Network series, even though that's kind of like, there's only like people, I think mostly like three, I love them all.
To me, that all what sticks with me is the Mega Man soundtracks. And actually brought on the original composer, Mixer, for the series for Mighty No. 9. That's great.
I'm so pumped. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I have at least two or three Mega Man soundtracks like stuck in my head at all times. The Mega Man, I think it was either Mega Man 2, Mega Man 3 intro, the Proto Man theme, and of course, you know, the boss, you know, when he's like a boss, that little theme that plays. That's like forever stuck in my head.
Or Wily's Castle is another good one. But yeah, my friends, I have a friend that comes over and he likes chiptunes, and we always discuss what's the best song of the Mega Man series. I mean, we break it by generation and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I have the two, I think, GameCube collections, Mega Man 1 through 8 or 1 through 7, and then the Mega Man X games. So, like, once in a while, I like to break them out and try to replay them all. And it's quite interesting, a lot of how they were able to do so much, but keeping with the NES's limitations, at least with the original series. And I think Mega Man actually was one of, like, the final series on the NES to make that transition to the SNES, because I think they must have gotten used to it. I guess the one question, I guess, is for both of you is, did you ever get, like, fatigue from the Mega Man series? Because it really is just, like, the same game with each iteration of it.
I don't really play them in marathon, but, you know, I would play, if I were to play them, I would probably jump generations. So, you know, like, from 3 to X and et cetera. I actually finished the X and Y series for the DES.
Oh, yeah. What about you, Larson?
Like, how, yes and no. Like, if I play the original Mega Man games, then if I try to, like, sit down and, like, play them for a while, I'll get really frustrated and I will rage quit.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, their level of difficulty it is really hard. Like, even if you watch, like, a stream of it, like, you just see people, like, can, like, breeze through it, no problem, but that's because, like, they memorized everything, and so, like, I always think, I'm like, oh, yeah, this will be easy, and then, like, you die, then, like, the first, like, I don't know, like, 20 seconds of starting the game. I tend to stick with Battle Network for replay value, and then I'll occasionally bring out one.
Yeah, for me, the level that always gets me is the Gutsman level for Mega Man 1, where, like, these freaking, like, platforms that the second their wheel runs over, like, a specific part of the track, it drops. So unless you jump, you know, right before it does that, you're just going to fall right through the floor. And, of course, you know, has evils of designs where they made, like, Dr. Wily's castle. They repeat that whole section again just to piss me off. Now, speaking about Mega Man and difficulty, I have a quick funny story about that. When I was at one of the a convention a few years ago, they had a classic video game challenge where they basically took all these, like, old-school NES games and turned them into, like, these impossible trials to try to beat. So, like, one was beat Battletoads, like, level 6, which that game is freaking impossible. And one was beat the Mega Man, the Yellow Devil, I think that's what his name is, the giant yellow guy that turns in all those blocks. And so you had to beat without using the exploit with Electric Man's shot. And I just remember thinking, that's not a challenge. I do that all the time. So I just stood there and I'd be in like 2 minutes. I got a t-shirt for it. And it's kind of weird, especially growing up playing these games, how now all those old games we've played are now these, you know, giant monolithic challenges that can be conquered.
Well, yeah, if you go back to those games, you really feel that level of frustration that you don't feel in the current games. Mm-hmm. There's no hand-holding. It's all brutal.
And no save points either.
No save points.
And one last Mega Man question before we go on. Have either of you played the Mega Man Legends series?
No.
I've seen it. I haven't played it.
That's sort of like the redhead stepchild of Mega Man, but it drew a following. It's essentially Mega Man as a third-person action-adventure game.
And it creates some new characters. That's cool. Didn't Bon Bon come from it?
Yeah. And to this day, I still kick myself for selling my copy of the first one. That's one of those, you know, I can't believe I was that stupid to get rid of it. And it is kind of weird how some of these old games have retained their collectability while others, you know, they go in the trash.
Yeah, I feel like the non-gold Zelda for NES is more rare than the gold one for Zelda.
Yep, my, I guess, rarest game I have is the Clay Fighter 63 and a third Blockbuster Edition. It was only released as part of Blockbuster's, like, tournament. I was able to grab a copy when they were done with it.
I always feel that any of my old PC games are rare, because you just don't see them resold in their original box.
Yeah.
I have the original Final Fantasy VII box and everything. It's, like, shaped like a rectangle. It's cool.
Yeah, that's what, like, Idols used to do, right? They had all everything triangle-shaped.
Yeah, it was neat. It must have cost a lot of unnecessary amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I got my nice Diablo 3 and StarCraft boxes right behind me, and I'll soon have the Reaper of Souls big box in my little collection. Now, it's funny that you talk about the PC games having collectability. With GOG, that has really affected, I think, the collectible market, because a lot of these older games, we can now buy them and a lot of their special features for, you know, $3, $5, or I think $10 for a few of them. And it's kind of weird how things have really changed over the last 5 years thanks to digital distribution. I remember Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. That game was like one of like the holy grail. You can never find the expansion type deals. I remember someone was selling it for like $200 on Amazon. And then GOG, when they said, oh, we just put it up, it's free for anyone who bought the original game. And I had like that moment of just like dumbstruck for a second, thinking about all the times I searched for this game and now I have it. Pretty much with two mouse clicks, I can play it now.
Well, yeah, I guess now it's not about the availability of a game as much as the original packaging and stuff like that. The physical copies is always going to be more rare now than the digital copies.
Yep, and I think that's kind of interesting. As someone who plays a lot of games, I'm not so much interested in the collectible value of owning a game, you know, putting it on a shelf and never playing it. I'm more interested in playing like the classic game design. As you mentioned, Ken, a lot of the older games were unique in their design. Like, you really don't see them these days.
Well, on that note, like it is, like, with game collecting, how it is, just trying to rebuild, like, after I gave away some of my GameCube games to a friend because he had a GameCube, I didn't have like a lot of money, and I always got a game for like Christmas or whatever. I gave him some, and one of the games I gave away was Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want to talk about a great game that doesn't have any sequels to it or is mm-hmm. extremely impossible to buy because it's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is just one game that, like, I thought, like, no one else would have. No, game collectors find them, keep them, and then we'll sell them for at least, like, triple the amount before they'd give it up. And if there's anything I hate about game collecting, even though I do it too slightly, is that. So it's sometimes it's impossible to get games back that you really want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's definitely a major pain in the ass. I think at least that's one of, like, the good things about how developers are moving to, like, cloud technology. And we talked about this, what was it, the Genkai? Is that what it was called, Ken? The one by David Perry?
Genkai? You mean the streaming service?
Yeah, for, like, backwards compatibility that they're looking at with Sony.
Yeah, but it's called something different now.
Oh. Yeah,
but it's going to help with the PS3 games that are coming out, because, again, everyone's really heard that they can't play their PS3 games.
Yeah.
And don't forget the PS3 had probably the best exclusives of last generation.
I would definitely agree to that. I mean, hell, it had Demon's Souls on it, so I think that sort of puts it at the top of the list.
Exactly.
And as Lois, as you were saying, it's definitely annoying, and I think it somewhat has eased up as more companies are at least putting at least half foot forward to have backwards compatibility. Although I think the one thing I'm worried about is Microsoft, not only with games for Windows Live, but with the original Xbox. Because it's definitely a lot harder to find some of their games. I know, like, Viva Pinata is one of those games that's just impossible to find new. And they didn't even bother to port it to the PC.
Oh, I have that game. And the maracas.
Oh, yeah.
It came with maracas, too.
Of course.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually talking about a different game. You said Viva Pinata, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. I was talking about a different game for the Dreamcast called Summa de Amiga.
There it is.
I don't know why I thought about
that. That's impressive.
Thanks. It's like the most... If you get even like a slight bit of luck right or back or whatever, you lose connection and the game just stops. It sucks. But when it's working, you love it.
I have my bongos from Donkey Kong Jungle Beat for the GameCube.
Oh, I have that too. Perfect.
Mm.
I'm all about rhythm games. So we can talk about Usu or Us or whatever. It reminds me of all those different websites that have all those different rhythm games, like emulations and stuff like that. There's actually one game I really love. It's like I saw it in Japan a couple times and Hong Kong, but they also saw it at I think it was at Otakon also, where you play like a DJ and you physically, it's like there's a panel in front of you at the very top, and then there's a panel at the bottom, which is a touchscreen,
mm-hmm.
and it's separated horizontally with the top and the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and you see like this line, this like, you know, the rhythm like goes left to right,
mm-hmm.
and then after it goes left to right at the top of the screen, it goes right to left at the bottom of the screen, and you kind of have to, like, just like Uso, you have to press at certain times and drag your fingers at certain times.
Mm-hmm.
And just goes back and forth, and it's really cool. It's one of those games that it's very satisfying, and the music was very mm-hmm. all over the place. Mm-hmm. Mostly house beat stuff.
Uh-huh. I was horrible with those rhythm games, stuff like Space Channel 5, Parappa the Rapper.
Okay, well, that's a different kind to me, because like, that's really basing on memory, too. Well, specifically Space Channel 5. Mm-hmm. Like that there's no prompt. You just have to feel the music and then hit the right times.
Yeah, and as someone who's tone deaf, that did not work out well for me.
Yeah, I think I was at one point in time in my life I was king of rhythm games. Every single rhythm game that came out, I had to try it, buy it, whatever. But I think the last rhythm game that I really enjoyed was Dance Central, which I don't mean even the third one.
That's one of those games I will never ever play. There is no rhythm for me there.
Oh, it'll teach you dance moves, man. You can shake it and move it.
All right, so I think with that lovely image, we can move on then to the topic of the week, and that is the Oculus Rift. So, as we talked about at the beginning of the cast, for those of you who don't know, Oculus Rift, the VR headset that has been in development, it started out as a Kickstarter, I think that was in 2012. The company announced last week of the second model, the second edition of the developer's kit. And so this week, it was announced that they have been bought out by Facebook, where Facebook basically bought majority control, and they sold the company, I think, what was it, $2 billion?
That's correct, $2 billion.
Obviously, there's been a lot of commotion about this. Did you, both of you, hear about what Notch said, the guy who did Minecraft?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, I'll give you the rundown for you, for everyone out there. As if you're a fan of Game Wisdom and listen to our podcast, I'm in a big I'm a huge fan of the virtual reality revolution that the Oculus Rift brought in.
Yep.
You see, again, the 90s was a big time where everyone thought VR was going to be huge. And because of the Virtual Boy and the extremely high cost, it was a no-go. And everyone's like, screw this dream. It's too far. And eventually, this random startup, Oculus VR, introduced this device, this magical device that solved the latency issue, and had, a really great field of view. The Oculus Rift came as a Kickstarter project. It was fresh. It was new. It solved all the VR problems from the past that everyone thought was impossible to achieve. And this guy, Palmer Luckey, well, everyone gave up on VR. Palmer Luckey, the creator of the Oculus Rift, just collected all these different head-mounted displays in VR and was just a huge fan of where the technology could go and worked out of his garage building prototypes. And, I guess he frequented a lot of forums with VR and even talked to Carmack directly. And, he got a lot of people to believe in his work. And he got, again, what, Valve,
Gabe Newell,
Epic, all those guys in that Kickstarter video gave approval. And I think it gave a lot of people hope. And again, you haven't tried it, but when you try it, you'll become a believer. And I think that's a big thing because everyone's always very skeptical of it.
Yeah.
And I think the people that have tried it, they're converted, and people that are, that, really dislike it or call it a gimmick are people that haven't really fully been immersed and been part of the environment and culture. And again, it's a very positive community because everyone's always thinking about what could we do, what can be done, how do we solve the issues of virtual reality.
Yeah, Matt, that is a good point. The fan base for it was really involved. I mean, when the Kickstarter finished, he was only asking for $250,000. I think, didn't he raise like $2 million or like $1.5 million?
He raised about 2.5 million, or he only asked for about 200,000. So again, people wanted this, but they didn't know how to fund this or how it could happen. And usually in the time, it's funded by these giant companies. There's no way any other way would be done, but this grassroots movement, and
thanks to
all
Kickstarter,
that goes,
basically,
thanks to Kickstarter, reignited, planted the seed of VR, and it came back into the fold. And because of the success of the Oculus Rift, other companies started to release their own version of the VR headset. And the biggest thing to me, and which is great, is third-party peripherals for it. Things like, the
STEM,
which is the wireless version of the Hydra, or the VirtuX Omni, which is a Omni treadmill where you can walk in any direction. Tactical Haptics, which is like an advanced version of haptics, which is the feedback you get from a controller, where you can actually feel the weight of something through gyroscopic motion. All those companies couldn't exist if Oculus was successful.
Yep. And
so there was, go ahead.
I was about to say, the other thing was that these companies actually collaborate with each other. Normally when you see these major corporations, they basically, keep it for themselves. They don't want anyone else to see it, or they won't be the first to market or whatever. But this was a case where all these guys started basically communicating with each other. The guys from Oculus talked with STEM people. We saw Kickstarters saying, we're going to support Oculus Rift, or we're going to do this with them. So there was, as you said, there was this community being built around virtual reality and basically trying to add a new experience to video games.
Right, exactly. Because everyone always believes, and every cyberpunk novel talks about it too, is that virtual reality is the future and we'll all be plugged into a Matrix-like or this hub world in the future that's pretty much the internet visualized, which sounds kind of scary, actually. But that's the concept. And the idea of having a presence in a virtual space, like that's the real achievement everyone's going for, which is why all these third-party peripheral companies coming in. And I didn't even discuss a thing called Prio VR, and they have this tracking system which is like a full-body suit where you actually move your entire body every single point in real time within a game space. Also, it could be used for cheap mocap too, which is really neat. And they actually failed the first Kickstarter and had a really successful run the second time. But again, that company couldn't exist without that movement of the Oculus Rift and VR.
It's pretty much similar to how Double Fine really started the video game movement on Kickstarter with Broken Age.
And I think another reason why we loved, and the community loved Oculus so much, is because they promised to keep the technology open, themselves be open. They had, forums and a subreddit where they were really vocal and discussed people directly. Again, it was an open forum for developers to talk about their issues or what the technology could be. Also part of the hype train where everyone speculated what could be used in the new specs for the new consumer version, which is always being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, within the first hour of the Developer's Kit 2 being released, I bought it right away. I pre-ordered it, didn't care how much it cost, I just got it, because
mm-hmm.
I saw what the DK1 could do. And even though it's not the consumer version or the final specs, it's a big leap from what the DK1 was. And if I really want to be a developer, if I want to really want to create something on it, then I need to purchase that device and, you know,
mm-hmm.
start moving my tech and software to that standard. Like, in thoughts of the future of a higher resolution, because this is only 1080p,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're talking about the new ones being 1440.
Mm.
So it's going to be pretty amazing. And or maybe they could even jump to 4K. Who knows? It's crazy. So again, there's a lot of reasons why people are so passionate about it. Because again, there's so many people that just dismissed VR, and all the people that said, I've tried it, I know it's going to work, it's great, this company mm-hmm. is so awesome, they're open, they have a lot of capital, mm-hmm. they've raised $100 million from other people interested in them.
And then, of course, Q, what happened this week?
WTF, what the hell? Just people just saying, just people reacted the same way, which is what?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we're going to talk about that. I have some questions for both of you in a few minutes about that.
Yeah, it's just a punch in the gut so hard. It's like if you one day you're you know, just playing your games and you found out that Valve got bought out by Walmart. You'd be like, what? Why? What? Because again, like, Valve is like a pillar of the community. Like, they do everything right. They have great customer service. They offer, they have an amazing public image. And people hate Facebook. People hate Facebook so much.
Mm.
And they love Oculus so much. So when you put those together, it just feels like a giant betrayal. It's like you're saying that you don't want to be, you're not going to be acquired. You're going to keep your technology open, yet you get bought out by one of the worst companies on the planet, one of the worst tech companies, where all they do is like sell your information to advertisers and put all this like, you know, things in the background, suck all away all your time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just a company with a really, really bad reputation. And they have nothing to do with gaming or software development or mm-hmm. hardware development. It's just Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So people, again, had that knee-jerk reaction of depression and just all their fears come into light, saying that this is the thing that kills VR. This is the thing that's going to stop us in our track and set us 10 years back.
Mm. And before we get to those questions, Larson, I forgot to ask you, have you followed the Oculus Rift at all during like the last few months?
I was probably like just seeing like, oh, is it out yet? Is mm-hmm. it out yet? Really, I would just check on it once in a while. So like, I haven't really strictly been following it, you know, seeing that the new development kit
mm-hmm.
came out. And I was like, oh, that's good. And then I didn't even know Facebook had bought out Oculus. Like, I was playing TF2 today and someone had their name as RIP Oculus. And I'm like, okay, so you're saying it's dead before it's even out? And I thought he was joking.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ken, like, we were talking on Steam, and he's like, hey, so did you hear about Facebook buying Oculus? And I'm like, no, you're joking, right? Like, that's a joke? And he's like, no. He, like, looked it up, and he sent me, like, an article. And
people were in tears. Everyone thought it was an April Fool's joke. Nope.
Yeah, definitely a surprise there. So I definitely got a few questions, and I will also talk about this in the greater scheme with Kickstarter and crowdfunding. So I guess my first question for the two of you is, now that Facebook owns Oculus Rift, does that temper your enthusiasm or your desire to buy the consumer version when it comes out?
Ken, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I have too much to say. Why don't you go first?
Okay. Yes, actually, because I am kind of pretty big on internet privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of given it up, and now like I really want to like kind of have it back, and that's like, impossible at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But like just knowing that like Facebook owns it is enough to make me uneasy, just because of how like Facebook's policy is about it has to share everything, it has to weigh your information. Like, it's a very uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough that I don't talk on Team Fortress 2 anymore, because I have to use my webcam
mm-hmm.
to play as my microphone at the moment, and that always turns on. I play like Team Fortress 2, and that made me uncomfortable to the point where I unplugged it because I don't know what's going on
mm-hmm.
at the point. So like, it just makes me uncomfortable knowing that, like, because, you know, Firefox, Chrome crashes, like, information gets sent back. If there's a problem, like, information gets sent back. Like, what kind of information? Is it just going to be mm-hmm. pure data? Is it going to be compressed? audio, like,
mm-hmm.
it's a very uncertain area. I would have to wait at least a year of it out on the market before I'd even consider buying it again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can put some of those fears to rest for you after I discuss everything I have to discuss soon.
Okay.
And also, the knee-jerk reaction was a lot of DK2 orders were canceled right away.
Mm-hmm.
As for me, even though I was depressed, and I'm still a little depressed, I tempered myself saying, I don't know where this is going to go. Why not ride this out and look at the news?
Mm-hmm. Have you kept your DK2 pre-order, or did you cancel it?
Yes. Yes, I said it. You know, I tempered myself, and okay. I made sure not to do the knee-jerk reaction. But let me just say the good and the bad,
okay.
reality, and the misconceptions with all this. So this might take a little bit, but let me just discuss it here.
Mm-hmm.
So when the news came out, there was a huge, gigantic backlash. Why would you ever want to buy anything? Like, and think about this, too. A lot of people pre-ordered the developer's kit to fund Oculus. They wanted the system to be as... They wanted the consumer version to be the best it could be and the company to be in its best shape. And not only did they want to try the product, but they wanted to support a good company.
Mm-hmm.
So when everyone found out that the money was going to go to Facebook,
mm-hmm.
why would you want to? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the reason why a lot of those developers got canceled. But at the same time, you have to look at the good and the bad. So let's look at the bad. Like, why does everyone hate the concept of it so much? And that's just because of how lame Facebook is. First of all, like what you said, data mining, like selling everything to advertisers, covered in ads, really desperate for they need to stay, what would you say, like important, right? Because right now, their age demographic is getting older, not younger. So all the younger people are going to different networks, while Facebook is getting, you know, is being pitched and growing amongst the, like, you know, 35 plus, 40 plus. And that's a sign of your company dying, not becoming stronger, which is why they're doing this in the first place,
mm-hmm.
right? Zuckerberg is looking for investments that could be the future, which is why he bought the, like, What's Up app or whatever it's called,
mm-hmm.
for $19 billion. He didn't buy it because he thought the technology was great. He bought it because of the user base. 220 million people just bought that user base, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instagram, the same kind of way. Because now they have a lot of equity. They have a lot of money to invest in.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the time to branch out and do the Google thing. And I think there's also a lot of PR talk that turned people off too, which is, Zuckerberg talking about how the Oculus Rift could be a social platform where you can have presence with someone else, but people don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
They want immersive games.
Yeah, I'm here. If I'm going to buy it, I'm here to play a game by myself in my own room. Maybe smack talk with somebody, not to be friends with people.
That is true. It is the ultimate antisocial device if you think about it. That's what it's supposed to do. At least put people in a fantasy world of some kind. Which is why, like, the reason I love my Oculus Rift is all my exploration through Skyrim and modding it to hell to make it look super realistic. And the potential of what could be there in the future. But again, it's a lot of PR talk. And the thing is, in the end of the day, you have to understand that Palmer Luckey and Don Carmack, who works for Oculus now, who in this acquisition now works for Facebook, which is a bizarre world. The reason why it was done, and you have to understand that you have to trust in their intelligence. Like, they wouldn't have made this deal purely for profit. Palmer Luckey strikes me as a guy that is really passionate about something. He really believes in VR, and he wouldn't put up all this work just for a quick buck, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't build up a hype train because he's like, oh man, I can make some money off this. No, he did it mostly because he loved virtual reality and wanted to go somewhere. Carmack the same kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel about this in a different kind of light than everyone else does after thinking about it for a while. They were bought for $2 billion, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to bring virtual reality to the mainstream, this is how you do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have an almost unlimited budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
To do whatever you want and get whatever patents or technology you need to get this done and out there at a lower cost than $200. You can make it $100 with the greatest tech. And don't forget, you have a gigantic network. Everything that Facebook owns is at your disposal to use, mm-hmm. to reach out and get as many people as possible. So along with the things that a lot of people feel really betrayed still, it doesn't matter because they felt like you could have made that money, you could have made more money. The company was worth a lot more than that if you would have just stayed the course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would have loved that because they could have been another Valve, but for VR, you know, mm-hmm. you'd be a pioneer. But in the end of the day, Oculus is Facebook, which is horrifying to people. And I think a lot of people don't have faith in acquisitions. Think about it. How many, like, think about EA and what they've done to come. Think of PopCap. When they bought PopCap, they were like, don't worry, they could be independent and make big releasing. All their games could be high quality. But look at Plants vs. Zombies 2. Oh my God. Talking about paywall mania, that is the pinnacle of I don't know, like castrating company right there. It's horrible. Look at BioWare. You know, they pumped out Dragon Age 2 when they got bought out. And that was a horrible game. And well, not horrible. It was a huge letdown game.
Oh, please, let's not talk about BioWare. I'm just getting flashbacks to Mass Effect 3.
And that's what I'm saying is that, yes, in the short run, they have all this huge network. They have all this liquid capital, right? All this stuff that could really bring VR to the mainstream, really bring make the consumer device the best it could be, everything like that. That's the positive. But in the end of the day, what's going to happen to it long term? Zuckerberg's talking about it as a social device, as a social experience, as a new way to talk to people.
And we've heard them, Oculus VR, saying, you know, we're going to remain autonomous from Facebook. You know, they're not going to get involved. But I think everyone sort of knows that's a little bit of bullshit. Because, I mean, when someone spends $2 billion to acquire you, I think they're going to have a little bit of say about what you're going to do on a day-to-day basis.
They're going to want returns. That's the big thing, right? You don't just spend $2 billion and think nothing's going to happen. Or, like, they're not going to... Profit's always going to be the main driving force, right? And don't forget, like, people said, like, well, a lot, they could have just, you know, went public with their company. Well, the thing is that no matter what scenario, they're going to be owned by investors now, because they have to answer to both Facebook and investors to turn a profit every quarter. So it's just like the same problem with EA and Activision. The reason they pump out low-quality games is because they need to make profits for their quarters. And it's going to be the same thing with Facebook. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Oculus to make this thing work. And the thing is that it was already working before, in fact, it was going in a great direction. And that's, I think that's the biggest killer, is that GDC this year was probably one of the best years virtual reality ever had. We talked about the different devices that were there, the announcement of Project Morpheus, which is the PS4 virtual reality device, which has a really great specs, similar to the DK2, right? Oculus was there with all their stuff, and their announcement of DK2. And don't forget all the other companies like VirtualX Omni, Prey VR, Tactical Haptics, even the Avantaguard, which is this like prism light system where it doesn't actually have a screen, it just shoots light in your eyes, something like that. I actually don't know. I think it's like light mirrors is what it is. But it's it completely does away with the screen door effect. And a bunch of other virtual reality devices were there too that were trying to, you know, ride this wave. So again, it was just a huge hype train. People were like, yeah, to the stars, we can, this is really happening, all these companies are porting it. And then the following week, days later, hear that Facebook buys Oculus. That's insane. And that's why people feel like that the dream is dead.
It's sort of like that class, like the old like Hollywood movies where, you know, the guy goes to the big city and, you know, all hell breaks loose type story. Like, as you said, Oculus VR was a company that really, you know, they really couldn't do anything wrong. They were, as you said, you compare it to like the Valve of the VR community. They were going to be this example of an independent company rising from Kickstarter to deliver something that was never done before to that capacity. And now they've been, you know, bought and assimilated into Facebook.
Right. And again, Facebook, everyone is always saying that, like, just, you don't even, I don't need to explain that. Like, people already make the disconnect between Facebook and Oculus Rift. They shouldn't even be in the same league. It's not even close to the same, you know, kind of thing. It's just that all that liquid capital. I guess another thing that Palmer Luckey said too in his little post was that, you know, like hardware companies would take apart their stuff, patent it, and never let it see the light of day. Similar to, you know, how all these oil companies and car companies buy out like alternative energy sources and, you know, really cool devices like with a water car, and they just shelf it. They just shelf it forever. It's never coming ever again.
So they want to compete with it, basically.
They don't want to compete with it, right. And the same thing could happen with this, with their discoveries. So he said, like, no way that I would let that happen to my company. So working with this company that's disconnected from software and hardware seems like a perfect idea, because they wouldn't claim over any of that stuff. Yet, it's also kind of foolish because they own everything now. You didn't partner up with them. you got acquired.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people have been saying is a distinction. It's not like it's a joint partnership. It's basically they bought you out. They own you, essentially.
Are you done with that train of thought, or?
Sorry, I just had to plug my headset in because it was beeping at me. But what I was saying was, they got acquired for $2 billion, but that's actually chump change to Facebook. They spent $19 billion on just a software app called What's Up, What's On It.
Yeah.
They could have made so much more. There could have been so much more. But what were you going to say?
Well, I just had kind of a question. I think it's in a different direction. I didn't know if you were on a train right now. I didn't want to derail.
No. Go ahead. Go on. This is a discussion.
Right. So one thing that after getting over the initial shock and heartbreak of the Facebook fiasco right now is video game consoles are not just for video games anymore. And that's something that is, it's not something I initially think about when I think about, like, an Xbox or a PS3 or, well, computer. But is that they all have multi-purposes now. It's like on Xbox, you can, stream movies, watch DVDs, play a CD on them or something. And then, just to be, like, an antagonist in this, why should the Oculus Rift be any different?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why should it be just for video games? Like, as bad as, like, I hate it. One article I pulled up was, like, it was Mark Zuckerberg, and he was talking about some of the different things that he wanted to do, like, or some of the potential it had anyway. And one of them was, like, a patient, I guess, could wear it and then be in the doctor's office or vice versa. And just, like, situations like that. So why should the Oculus Rift remain? Another thing was that I think, like, the Navy is also using them. As
robotics too.
Yeah, for training. Mm-hmm. So, like, why should the Oculus Rift remain strictly for gaming?
They weren't ever strictly for gaming. It's a device like anything else. It's like a monitor. Mm-hmm. They were already branching out to different fields. It was already being used in robotics. It was already being used in military. It was even used in that Game of Thrones premiere party. So, I mean, it's used in a lot of different experimental stuff. Some of the fun experiments is, like, I at least one put a camera to the Rift and made themselves third person as they walked around. There's a lot of cool things you can do with the Rift. There's a lot of great concepts behind it. The problem is that we're talking about Facebook's talking about it as a social device,
mm-hmm.
pretty much to extend the life of Facebook, right? And that data they're sending back is nothing major right now. Like, the only thing they could send back is but your rotation data and stuff like that. Nothing major.
Mm-hmm.
But when they build in a social platform, you have to log in to use your Oculus Rift. That's when they start data mining all your crap.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's something they would do?
Not yet. Not very soon. It'll have to be like multiple generations after. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll release a free, a discounted Rift with a Facebook like account, or maybe that you'll have to pay a fee to use the Rift, like maybe $10 a month or something. So they could do that. But again, Facebook isn't really, other than they offer technically a free service, so they probably won't do that. It would be, they'd have to be losing a lot of cash to actually have to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said before, like what you're saying, it is right. I mean, it doesn't have to be towards gaming, but I was saying that it was already going that direction anyways.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to be acquired for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sorry, do you mind if I ask one more question about this?
Please, go on.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you were going to add something to that as well. Sorry if I interrupted you.
No, I was going to ask a question to both of you, but go ahead.
Okay. So if there was a social platform, if it was more of, say, an indie developer or maybe a less known developer or maybe even Facebook itself, if they just hadn't bought it out, if they had just announced that they were going to be making like a program that would allow them to do Oculus Rift, do you think it would be just as much as a problem as there is now, especially, let's say if it was Facebook, let's say they were going to partner up with Oculus and be like, all right, well, we're going to make a program that you can use the Oculus Rift so you can talk to your friends or hang out with them or like whatever they're planning on doing it for the social aspect. Do you think there would still be just as much as an outcry as there is right
definitely
now?
Definitely not. No, there wouldn't be because they're not owned by them. Like people have had some outcry with the partnership with EA, just making games, but at least they're a software company.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't owned by them, but they're being acquired. Everything mm-hmm. that they are is now Facebook. If they partnered up with them, people would be a little angry, but they would still accept it because they understand that Oculus needs money,
mm-hmm.
they need support, and they'll do what they have to do, but not be bought out. This is not the way because everyone feels like the openness of the Oculus Rift will be closed once again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's knee-jerk, all these game pods got canceled, like just tons of people canceling their their projects for the Oculus Rift. Not saying that it's never coming, like the Minecraftian version of it's never coming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's a little too presumptuous to assume that it's going to go to hell. It's not going to go to hell yet. In the short term, it's going to be really good for the company. And the consumer version will come out sooner, not later. Sounds great. But in the long term, give it a few years, different generations, you're going to see like a Facebook-branded Oculus Rift with the worst things that you could possibly imagine. For now, in the short term, and even medium, I think it's definitely going to help the company grow. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll even be able to buy themselves back and like become an offshoot, become independent again. It's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
With another company, though, that is as big as Facebook is?
Yeah, there's companies that have been able to buy back their shares or all the employees left, or they bought the patent rights, and they made their own company again in a different name. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Studios get formed. Go on.
All right. So I want to move on. I want to just share my opinion on this, because as we talked about on previous casts, I'm one of those guys, I don't really have a dog in this fight. I was with the group of people. I was somewhat, I would say, removed from the Oculus Rift. I wasn't exactly as enamored as you were, Ken. I think my last virtual reality experience, as you mentioned, was the Virtual Boy. And as you said, that pretty much killed the virtual reality for a good 10 years, I think. So, regarding the whole Oculus Rift buyout, there's two parts of this that sort of, I guess, make me feel a little uneasy. It feels a little slimy to me. And I want to get both of your thoughts on this. So the first part is regarding the Kickstarter pledges. And kind of feels that all the people who donated the money, as you said, Ken, they sort of got screwed in a sense. They basically gave their money to Oculus VR because they needed the money at the time to then have the whole company be bought for $2 billion. So it sort of feels like they're being left in the dust. And this also raises the concern about equity with Kickstarter and crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. As we've talked about on previous casts, even though Kickstarter and crowdfunding in general is something that you're essentially getting a product for it, it's still more or less considered a charity, a donation. You're giving the money because you are wanting to support this company or this game or this whatever. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, you're not legally going to get any equity from that company. And I think, Ken, you brought this up on a previous cast. One of your friends thought they felt that you should be able to buy shares, or if I donate $100, I should own, you know, 1/100th of your company or whatever.
That's what I'm saying, is that it's a different thing. It's not a public traded company. If you wanted to do that, then invest in a public traded company.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go to Kickstarter for that. And that's a big thing, too, is all these people are just whining about it because they need more reasons to hate on this acquisition, because they want a chunk of that $2 billion. Mm-hmm. But that's mostly because of how burnt they felt. They just felt so burned because they believed in something. They had a dream.
Yeah.
And now you just crushed it with this acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
You put their future in jeopardy,
right?
They want something back out of this. To them, it's probably one of the most traumatic things that could happen to VR.
Mm-hmm.
Like if VR doesn't take off, people look back on this acquisition as the reason why it never took off.
As the nail in the coffin, essentially.
Exactly. Because don't forget, look at GDC. That hype train was huge.
Mm-hmm.
All the people are making devices that are just as effective, if not better, than the Rift. And people are really big companies are putting a lot of money, of R&D. People are using it, believing in it, great responses from people. And like the future really looked like it was happening. It's like the equivalent of the flying car was actually made. People would go crazy after it. Same concept. Virtual reality is in our grasp.
And then Ford buys it.
Yeah, and suddenly someone, it's like, you know, that's why that subway system sucks in the West Coast, is because people like, you know, Ford came in like, take those subways away, cars only.
Mm-hmm.
Same concept, you know. It sucks. I think my analogy of Valve being bought up by Walmart is the equivalent of what this is. You know,
mm-hmm.
it would just break your heart, because let's turn around. Let's use those names instead. What if Valve did get bought out by Walmart, and they said, don't worry, Walmart has a lot of money, make a huge amount, they're gonna leave us independent. But you don't think something will seep into Valve? You don't think something would carry over?
Nope, don't trust it. I would bail ship so fast. Like, buy Team Fortress 2, I love you to pieces, but now there's going to be a Walmart button that we can now pin to our chest.
People, that's the only way Origin will become successful. Like, mainstream, they're like, guys, Valve's dead. The only thing we have left is Origin. It's better than nothing.
That's the new tagline for Origin. It's better than nothing.
Better than nothing.
But they would sound more like their soul had been crushed
They'll have a service like, oh, you can bring all your games from Steam to Origin. We'll just attach a certain amount of DRM to all of it. And your DLC won't transfer, but you can rebuy them through the Origin store. Perfect.
It's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing.
If it wasn't 1 a.m. right now, I'd be screaming at the top of my lungs. Like, this is like a horror story unfolding in front of my eyes.
That's the equivalent to Oculus. This is what everyone feels. Listen, how many jokes were out? Like, images were out of, like, Facebook in virtual reality with, like, likes and ads everywhere in your virtual reality space. It's all over the place.
I think you'd be frustrated thinking about it.
I just think the funniest video that really feels, I think, everyone can have the same kind of reaction is the Jedi scene where Anakin is burning and then Obi-Wan is saying, "You are the chosen one." You're supposed to destroy the Sith, not join them. And it's the face of Palmer Luckey. Aww. And he's just like reaching out. It's exactly that. People had faith in this guy. They said like, if history would turn back, they would say like, this is the pioneer of VR. This is the guy that set it all off. And now, he's just an employee of Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but who's his son that's going to come and destroy him, though?
Gaben. Gabe Newell.
Oh, God. That's the perfect answer.
They have their own VR device. In fact, they shared a lot of their... They collaborated a lot with Valve, Oculus, to solve a lot of VR problems. And there's actually a superior VR solution at Valve, but they have like their entire room like with like different... what's it called? QR codes for like tracking and stuff. So it's like really immersive and amazing. Everyone that goes and tries it thinks it's like light years ahead of any VR that's out there. So people are always saying, "Save us, Gaben," or "Gaven, you're our only hope." Everyone's always saying something like that.
Nice.
Because it's true. They do have an amazing, and don't forget, they become what Oculus could have been, a really highly valued independent company that puts trust in their customers above all else.
Yep, and as we talked about in previous casts, that goodwill Valve has built up with Steam and just their general actions has really been what has helped Steam just steamroll into being this dominant force in the not only just the PC industry, but just the entire game industry.
Yeah, listen, when people said Steam machines, if it was another company, they'd be like, if EA was like, "We're going to release these dedicated boxes," they'd be like, "EA, what do you think? You're smoking crack here?"
Yeah.
But because it was Steam, you're all like, "Valve is making this? Yeah, I'll give benefit of the doubt. I'll give them plenty of benefits of the doubt. They haven't betrayed me yet."
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly it. Oculus could have been them. They could have been the shining beacon.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're on my Facebook. Like, no matter how much positive I put onto it, I'm like,
I
know they need capital. I know they could use all their networks and they could have so much money and build such a great device, but they're still going to be Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to become like what PopCap became, what BioWare became, what Maxis became, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and go ahead, Larson.
Okay, so this just kind of hit me. Like, Ken, like, a point you've been making all night is that most likely Oculus needed some money or some more funding or whatever, or that they would have extra money to work on the Oculus. And, you know, $2 billion is quite a lot more than the original $250,000 that they asked for. Like, but they had planned on at least being able to create and release a commercial product with that much. Is that correct or no?
Yeah, definitely. Not only that, they raised $100 million extra capital from investors.
So then my question to stem off of that is, was the $2 billion buyout really necessary?
Yes. To bring it to the mainstream, yes, definitely. Because they have to produce a product that is viable. Like right now it's a techno fetish. Like $350, not everyone, that's almost the price of a console, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do people really want to buy that much for a peripheral? Not really. But with this amount of money, they could bring it below $200. They can advertise it. There's a lot of news about it and information about it.
Now, one thing, Ken, I want to ask you. With the original Kickstarter, that was just for the developer's kit, right? They weren't
building... DK1, right? Exactly. They didn't. No promise of the consumer version. DK1, that was it.
Okay.
So they fulfilled all their quest for Kickstarter. They didn't lie about anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people feel betrayed because they wanted... It's like your favorite mom pop shop being bought out by a conglomerate, and then that they're like, "Oh, don't worry, we're the same mom pop shop. We just have this name attached to it. We're Walmart's mom pop shop."
Mm-hmm.
You're like, "No, you're not. You're just another Walmart, but just smaller.
And now regarding the money, that's another part that I think sort of raises that red flag in my mind. As you said, Ken, the original Kickstarter was just for $250,000, and they raised $1.5 million from that, plus on top of, you know, money they received after that from people who were interested in investing it. So it didn't seem like they were hurting for money or they were bleeding for money. I think that is another thing that I think has a lot of people on edge. It's not like they were saying, oh no, we need money, or, you know, we're going to go bankrupt. It's like everything's all happy, joy, you know, we're doing this, we're going to be this beacon of the community, and oh, now we're bought by Facebook, $2 billion.
Well, my theory is a couple of things. They had a lot of investors, right? Mm-hmm. I think those investors had a say in the company's direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they all said, get bought by Facebook, because then their investment will come back faster and sooner.
But of course, speaking about investors, they're going to get that money, but the people who originally invested in Kickstarter, they're, you know, out the door. Nice to meet you.
They could have, if I had to choose between, like, and this sounds horrible to me, because everyone would always say, everyone on the forums was always like, oh, well, no one can turn down $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
If I was Oculus, I would turn down the $2 billion because you already, first of all, you already have $100 million
mm-hmm.
with tons of other people's support. You have a huge community that's not just supports you. They're almost like
devoted to you,
right? They would do anything. If you made an announcement saying, like, guys, we need to raise $2 billion, they'd be like, we'll do whatever we can.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we need to do, we'll try it. We'll go for it, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you were to say, like, guys, we need you all to donate this amount of money to us, or we're going to get bought by Facebook, people would just turn, people would, like, freak, you know, sell their houses, whatever.
The piggy bank, so smash
it. Yeah, you would do that, Ken, wouldn't you? You'd probably also sell your wife.
Yeah, I'd
sell
do
your
whatever.
Blood.
I'll sell some of my organs. I'm at least, like, my body parts alone, it's like a couple, like, 40,000, right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go, buddy.
Yeah, I don't need all that extra stuff.
Oculus stay alive just from your donations.
All right, I can live in a virtual world. I just you live
there
on machines.
There you go. Yeah. And they'll pull on the Oculus Rift. This machine was in part thanks to Kenneth Alm's liver, kidneys, and left arm.
He also lost his one of his lungs and
that's
one of his eyes.
The next model. They'll put that on the next one.
Right, it's perfect. But it's what I'm saying, though. Like, I would have kept the huge following, that push of VR with the $100 million capital, because I know I would make it back in the future. It would take longer, like 5 years longer. But you would be building something huge.
You
would
have been
totally worth it.
Something unique, and most importantly, it would have been yours completely. No one could take that away from you.
You would be the Gaben of VR. People would look up to you, right? They'd be like, this is the guy that I trust.
Yeah. And I think I would be the same way as you, Ken. If I had that opportunity to essentially immortalize myself like that versus $2 billion, I think I would keep the company. If I wasn't exactly bleeding for cash, I would rather play the long game. As you said, Ken, who knows what this would be like in 5-10 years?
It could be $200 billion,
mm-hmm.
right? It could be huge. Like, I'm talking about whatever you made in the short term,
mm-hmm.
you probably could double it in the long term.
Yeah.
Because of the potential, the fans, the acceptance, it would have just took longer.
Mm-hmm.
The seed would have just took longer, that's all.
And I think
they didn't need to do this. I think that's another reason people are outraged.
Yeah, exactly. I think bringing this back to Valve, it's basically what Valve did. They didn't play the short game. They didn't say, we're just going to make Steam and then we're going to sell it to EA or whatever. They cultivated it over the years, building this fan base, building up these connections to where it is now. And because of that, Valve is essentially untouchable at this point. I mean, I can't imagine what exactly their net worth is thanks to Steam.
Well, they're private, so you don't even know.
Yeah.
You'll never know.
I mean,
just say they're just know that they're making billions.
Yeah. And as you said, Ken, they have the money to do anything. If they want to make a console, a Steam box, who's going to say no? Or who's going to say no? You don't have the money for that.
And also, don't forget, the fans would support it. They have a huge amount of anyone that's a PC gamer loves Valve, right? If you're to hate Valve as a PC gamer, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, they've become pretty much synonymous with PC gaming at this point.
If anyone says, I like being a lot of Florissant, but if anyone says, I love Origin over Steam, that person's astroturf. You know, they probably work for EA or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way any sane person would say anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's the thing, as you said, that makes us very icky about this whole situation is that they could have been the next Valve. They weren't hurting for money. If they would have played the long game, the company would have kept their equity. They would have kept their recognition, their brand, and they could be huge. But that's all been thrown away versus, you know, the quick profit.
Exactly. And I know, again, people always say that, like I said earlier, turn down $2 billion. No one could turn down $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, if you really love VR, if you really loved your company,
yeah.
If you really love your company, you wouldn't have freedom and you wanted to do whatever you wanted or have no patent fears or anything else like that, then that's it. You would just keep your company and go for long term. You're not bleeding for cash at all. $100 million is still a good amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
You can still do a lot with that. You can release the consumer device and market it, and you still be making money off that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that bought the DK1 is going to buy the DK2, and then, or at least everyone that bought the DK1 is definitely going to buy the consumer version for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
And they're going to spread it around like wildfire, word of mouth. It's still a very powerful thing.
Yep. So, Larson, would you have taken the $2 billion or would you have kept the company? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, $2 billion is a lot of money mm-hmm. to be considering turning down.
Mm-hmm.
That's millions upon millions mm-hmm. of dollars right there. Ken did make a good point earlier where he was like, about the, hey guys, either start donating money or we're going to be bought out by Facebook. Like, I mean, they could say that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and even if Facebook came up with like a non-disclosure thing, be like, hey, we're having offers to be bought out. Like, we need more money, unfortunately. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think there are plenty of other options. I mean, I don't know why the creators thought going with Facebook, being bought out by Facebook, was mm-hmm. a good idea specifically. I mean, if Facebook's talking to them, then I would personally assume that there must have been somebody else talking to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why yeah. not go with them instead of, say, this, yep. this giant?
Yeah, I have a theory behind that. One, the company, the Facebook itself, isn't correlated and are interested in their patents, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing.
Another
thing is, too, is, like, maybe he truly did love VR, and he said, like, this is the chance for me to make that dream come true. With all this capital, I can easily make this VR mainstream. Mm-hmm. Get everything I need and really push it out there. Take the reputation bullet for the big impact what VR could be. Instead of it being a trickle, it could make it a flood.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, too. I think he really believed in VR so much that he'd be willing to take that hit
mm-hmm.
for the greater good. But you could have done it the other way. And you could have had it both ways. You could have made a lot of money and kept your reputation.
Yeah, I think playing it the long game, I think that would have been the better alternative. As we've said, if they did that, the company could be worth even more than that in a few years' time, especially given the support of it. And as we've said time after time on this podcast, it's not like they were dying for money. It's not like they were bleeding dry. They had constant investment. They got more than what they needed from the original Kickstarter. And it just seems so much like, you know, out of left field, like this whole situation has happened.
Yeah, and don't forget, you have $100 million with a small company. Not even a super gigantic company. You're a very small company.
Yeah.
So your overhead cost is very low,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Just
mm-hmm.
time. So I guess they're trying to trade money for time.
Yeah, but they've also, I think, traded pretty much their reputation in the process.
It's going to take, they can repair it. It's going to take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, like, from that perspective, let's just say if other companies were to come up to me and they were doing it strictly for patents, which would then, you know, ruin everything.
Mm-hmm.
If Facebook did give the $2 billion, I'm wondering if they're considering, instead of just having the original, what, $2 million-ish starting batch of Oculus Rift, I wonder if they're going to try to really mass produce the Oculus Rift
mm-hmm.
for more everyday consumers at this point, or mm-hmm. just trying to get it so that a little bit, maybe more like gamers like me who aren't gonna probably pay the
$300-$400 something.
Yeah, like that. Absolutely no way. Like that's out of the question, especially for someone as cheap as me. But if it was closer to $200 or under, that's when I'd probably start considering it. Like I'm wondering if mm-hmm. that's like their sole reason, if that's a fighting reason for them to accept the $2 billion in the first place.
Well, I think that's really the sole reason mm-hmm. to bring the cost down from $300, because they said it would never go above $300, and they're honest, it wasn't ever $300 mm-hmm. above $300, except for the $350, but that's like a $50 deposit. But what I was saying was they want to bring it mainstream, and that is the way to do it. Bring it low as much as they can.
Yeah.
And their PR talk is like, don't worry, it's the future of a social experience. Like, that's window dressing. The real reason is cost.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And That, I think, may be the big deciding factor whether or not they'll be able to salvage this. If they can release this for like $100, $150, that may sort of ease the thing. If the choice was either remaining independent and releasing this for $300 versus being bought by Facebook and selling it for $100, that may be enough to sway opinions. But
well, there's more theory to that, too, is that, again, remember how I talked about the hype train in GDC and how all these VR devices were coming out? Mm-hmm. Well, that was it, though. They can't hope to compete with Sony, and Sony was going to release their device for $200. Mm-hmm. So could Oculus Rift really survive that? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they would be hurting really badly.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other part of this, and I think this was also going to be a major factor, is what about all the other companies who were planning on supporting Oculus Rift? As you mentioned, the STEM, the treadmill, the 360 treadmill.
They're gonna have to. They have no choice. They've already made their bed. They have to lay in it now.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think it was gonna happen either. None of them knew.
No one did. I think outside of Oculus.
Oculus, except for this one guy that worked in the building of Oculus, that he saw Mark Zuckerberg, and he called it like months ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, that guy. He must have been like going home and crying in his sleep, knowing something bad was going to happen.
The guy was like, maybe it's happened. Like, nah, Facebook. She's probably just trying it out.
That's crazy talk. That will never happen.
Yeah, that would never happen. Because, like, yeah, dude, I'd be the same way. I'm like, he's just trying it out. Uh-huh. It's a new technology. The guy's a billionaire. He can do whatever he wants. If he wants to travel to Oculus, try it out, he can do that. Whatever.
I think we're making a lot of people depressed right now as we're talking about this.
Well, anyone that was in that believed in VR or believed in Oculus, I think are really depressed about it. I think people that are outside of it just don't really care. Like, well, that's another technology squashed. Mm-hmm. Oh well.
Right.
It's like I want to sit on my couch all day looking at 2D screen with my controller. I'm like, listen, if you always believe in that, if you always believe in the status quo, nothing's ever gonna change, right? If you're like, well, I don't want, like, people hate motion controls, sure. But listen, those predecessors will build something much greater in the future, right?
Yep, it's playing the long game, as we talked about. It's not about that first iteration. It's about building something, building the seed that's going to grow into something really big and, you know, industry changing. But that may not happen anymore.
Exactly. And I think no matter what scenario, and this is more of a final note kind of thing, is no matter what happened, you have to understand that what Oculus Rift did was plant a seed.
Mm-hmm.
And all this VR stuff wouldn't even be a thing if they didn't exist. So they still made that impact. No matter what scenario, they brought it to the mainstream through the news of this acquisition. They also brought it. They allowed all other companies to flourish because of it. And the dream of VR is back and real again. It's just everyone's just fearful that they're going to be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be the same dream. It's going to be a disordered dream with ads and likes and shares.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have one final question for both of you, and then we'll start wrapping this up.
Sure.
And that has to do with Kickstarter and crowdfunding. Bringing this way back to, as we said, that this was pretty much, you know, like the American dream or the Kickstarter dream. Small company, brilliant idea. They just needed the money to get it done. And crowdfunding was sort of the answer to that. And one thing that we're now hearing people talk about is how this will impact Kickstarter. Over the year, we've been talking to numerous guests, enthusiasts and designers alike, who have been debating whether or not crowdfunding can remain viable. And one major part of that is consumer confidence. If that disappears, crowdfunding will pretty much die overnight. So my question to the two of you is, given what has happened with the Rift and Facebook, do you think that this will severely impact crowdfunding in general? Or do you think that it will avoid it or won't be as impactful?
I think it created a darkness upon Kickstarter, right? Because these mainstream news outlets are saying, like, Kickstarter company gets bought out by Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean for investors? I'm like, listen, they're not investors.
Mm-hmm.
They're just interested parties that believed in it. If they really were investors, then they would, you know, make either a gigantic donation, or if they're a publicly traded company, that's how they do it too.
They will bought equity.
Exactly. But Kickstarter says nothing like that, nor did they ever lie about that either. Nowhere did they say that you're going to get money back from it. It's more of a charity service with some gifts and bonuses to it. It's great for that reason. But if you're really going in for investment, you're in the wrong location, my friend.
What about you, Larson? What do you think?
I think people might become more hesitant with things like this, like specifically a big thing. I mean, like, obviously, I understand where Ken's coming from, and I do agree with him. Where, like, yeah, you're not an investor. Like, that's very obvious. That's different from buying. This is much different from buying stocks. Where is I going with this? Give me 1 second. I just lost it.
Sure. No, don't worry about that. It should be time for me to lose my train of thought, too.
What is late, so it's understandable.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm usually up to, like, 4 anyway. This is when I get home from work.
Join the club. I'm already doing that.
Good. Got 3 insomniacs on.
Perfect.
Oh, my God. Where is it going? So, as I was saying, like, if they're not investors, like, you are just buying a product just early. Like, you're pre-ordering an Xbox, and then you kind of have, like, a 50-50 chance if it's actually going to be completed or not. Like, I mean, all the, like, I've had very good experience. If I had known Oculus Rift would have been bought out, like, let's say if I had invested into buying an Oculus Rift, or, sorry, I probably shouldn't use that word. If I had donated money to the Kickstarter for Oculus Rift, and I had known, 2 years or so later that it would have been bought out by Facebook, I'm like, on the edge. But, like, at the same time, you can't tell about that for sure. If I was as deeply invested as Ken is about this, obviously, like, I have invested into plenty of Kickstarters. Like, I think right now I'm up to 6. And so far I've been quite happy with the results, regardless of what happens. Like, there are hiccups. Sometimes it takes a couple extra months. Currently, there's one right now that's going on for another year. But I'm still invested into it. And that this should be a risk that if you're going to be giving your money away, it's a risk you need to calculate and judge if you're going to be okay with it or not. Just like how you're, like, we're crowdfund, like, we are donating money to a company to get started, and we are getting promised something in return. Now, just because Facebook bought them out doesn't mean you're not going to get the product. You're still going to get it. Like, so with people, like, complaining about it, like, I know we've been complaining about it discussing it this whole time. Like, you know, Ken, you're still going to get your Oculus Rift.
Right.
You know?
Well, I've tempered my rage, which is why. Like, think about this. I think everyone would accept it if they said, mysterious company buys out Oculus Rift for $2 billion. People are like, oh, cool, Oculus got $2 billion.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be all like, Facebook. It's because Facebook has this terrible reputation. Terrible reputation. That's why everyone hates what happened to Oculus.
Yeah. But do I think, is this going to change people's crowdfunding and giving to Kickstarters they really like? Absolutely not. Like, if I go on tomorrow and I see, like, another of my favorite webcomics or another one of, like, a game that isn't out on the market that I really want to see, I'm still going to give them my money because I want it.
Well, I mean, I think that's definitely true, but all I'm saying is it's planting its own dark seed, the shadow of doubt. That's all it's doing. That's all. I'm saying, I'm not saying it's going to stop. I think it's a great new viable way of funding projects. I just think that it's going to make people think twice about that kind of stuff. That's all. I still will invest. If I think some technology is great, I'll still invest in it. Hell yeah. And I understand it. If I was in their position, I would also want the same kind of treatment, you know? So it's cool with me. I think it's definitely a valid way of going about it.
Okay. Yeah, I think for me, I don't think it's going to affect, like, the indie projects, stuff like The Darkest Dungeon, which I donated to, or any of, like, the little game projects. But I think this will impact major technology. I don't know if something else that would be asking like $250,000 or another piece of hardware will be able to make the same impact as Oculus Rift did.
Oh, well, I think that is way ahead of you already. I mean, there's the Pebble Watch, right? It created the smartwatch storm at CES. There's smartwatches everywhere because of the success of the Pebble. And this, still, the hardware-wise, is the most successful of any Kickstarter. $10 million. $200,000, $10 million in return. That's how much people wanted that thing. And listen, those Kickstarter projects, those hardware successes, actually pushes the mainstream, right, to that direction. Because everyone's like, they voted with their wallets. This is where people, this is what people want. So then they make their own iterations right away.
Yeah, and I think I agree with Larson saying that if it's a Kickstarter for something that I really, really want, I'm going to donate anyway. You know, damn the risk. If it's something that these people feel passionate about, something that I really want to see happen, I'm going to throw them a few bucks because I want to see it happen as well.
Yeah, if somebody immediately came out and they made a game for a Dreamcast for some reason, I'd do it. I'd buy it.
Heck,
if Gabe and came, if Gabe Newell came out and said, I'm announcing this virtual reality game, MMO, Pokemon game, and I'm going to buy the rest of Pokemon, but I need your money, I would still, I would, hell yeah, throw all the cash I could get on that.
Fuck thing. Yeah, I would probably give him the rest of my, that's in my trust account for that shit right there.
I trust Gaben. I trust him.
If his next thing's going to be the holodeck from Star Trek, that's probably one of their secret plans, by the way, with what they're doing with VR. That's probably next for them after they master VR.
Technically, that's what they did. they put, you mean they attached it to something that was mobile, right? Mm-hmm. And then they put a whole room dedicated to this VR experience. That's pretty much the holodeck.
Yeah. So,
okay. I have one question. Mm-hmm. If Gaben asked for $5 million to kickstart Half-Life 3, how fast would it be hit?
It would be hit for sure, but it might not be day one.
But how fast would it be? I'm saying within a weekend.
I would say a week.
Yeah,
it takes a while to build up this team. It's like, what, the highest, like, it could go as a couple hundred thousand usually within a day. So, like, there's like a big initial push with Kickstarter. But eventually that kind of drizzles down.
Mm-hmm. I would say a week, too. I would give it that.
But would it get funded? I think it definitely would get funded. And $5 million is nothing. $5 million is still a lot. But I'm saying it. But I don't think it would ever cover the cost of Half-Life 3. Not even close.
I was just throwing out like a random number that
yeah.
is like somewhat realistic. I mean, rare but happens on Kickstarter.
If they were like, I'm releasing a Half-Life 3 game for a smartphone, then maybe $5 million.
Oh God.
Like, how would you feel about that? They were like, we can have like three a smartphone game. Ta-da! that would destroy them, but it would shake it up.
All right. So I think with that, it is getting a bit late. It's after one here.
Same.
Yeah, I think we can wrap things up. I think we've had a great cast regarding the Rift, and I think it will definitely be interesting to see what's going to happen over the next few weeks, and what will Oculus VR's, you know, official statement, or if they're going to do anything regarding the outcry over it.
They have a little bit, but if you guys have any of the viewers out there or listeners out there mm-hmm. that have questions about Oculus Rift, you can always send a message or leave a comment, and I can answer any of those that you have, because this is something I follow extremely closely, do development for, and have a big love for the community. Mm-hmm. So we're all still mourning, but we're still also accepting.
And maybe you'll be able to write a piece for the site as well with a little bit more detail about your thoughts on the Rift.
It'll be pretty much what I said mm-hmm. in this cast, but a little more articulate, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So I think with that, we can end things for the cast this week. Lorson, it was great talking to you again.
Thank you. It was great talking to you guys about this subject today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hope to bring you back for the roundtable discussion about games in the industry.
Yeah.
That will be very
or
fun.
Girls in the industry. Girls within the gaming universe.
And Kent, it was great talking to you. Hopefully I'll be able to try out the Oculus Rift when you come over and spend some time.
We'll see if I wake up on time. I'm going to be up late tonight.
Yeah. All right. So with that said, we're going to wrap things up for the Perceptive Podcast this week. As always, if you're interested in contributing to Game Wisdom, either by writing a piece for the site or by appearing on the podcast, you can send me an email. You can find all the information, guidelines, and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. So, with that said, have a great weekend, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.